This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. Oh, hello. There you are. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. That is my show. That is my podcast. My name is Shane Told. I play in a band, Silverstein. I've been doing that for, a long time, 17 years. I've been the lead singer for that band. And now, this podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman for a professional band. And today, this week, we have a great episode with a guy that's been doing it even longer than me, a huge influence of mine. At one point in this podcast, I have to say, hey man, like, if it wasn't for your band, my band wouldn't exist. And of course, he cracks a little bit of a joke there. But it's true. It's 100% true. I mean, growing up, I was a punk rock guy. I loved punk rock, some hardcore. Didn't really get into the whole, you know, emo genre until I heard the Get Up Kids. And for me, they were really the band that bridged the gap for whatever reason. So that's right. We have Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids on the show this week. Before we get into it, I want to thank everybody that tuned in last week for my conversation with Kay Flay. Great episode, one of my favorites. And hey, we got a lot of old episodes. We got like 75 of them if you haven't checked them out. So if you're new to this show, please go back. There's some really, really great stuff. And of course, make sure you hit the subscribe button because we got some great episodes coming up in the future as well. If you want to get in touch, if you want to tell me what's up, what you think of the show, if you have suggestions for upcoming guests, anything like that, it's very simple. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com is the email address. We're also on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So punch us in on there. I'm sure you'll find us. And if you're not so happy, if you don't like this episode, if you think I'm a terrible host, I have no business doing this, we got the hate line option. We've got the hate line. So give me a call. Leave me a message. 1-657-666-HATE. H-A-T-E. And I had a good hate line. Very good hate line coming next week. And I will roll these clips eventually. But hey, you know me. I love the hate. So please, feel free to give me a call. Again, that number, 1-657-666-HATE. In other news with me, I'm going on a solo tour very, very soon. In fact, it starts this Wednesday, May 10th, in Chicago. I'll be at the Beat Kitchen. I'm really excited about that. Then I go to Las Vegas on Friday, May 12th. That is at Beauty Bar, downtown Las Vegas. That'll be a lot of fun. Then I have three shows in California, Anaheim House of Blues in the Small Room on Saturday, San Diego House of Blues in the Small Room on Sunday, Mother's Day, But I'm sure you could hang out with your mom earlier. You know, hang out with her during the day and then be like, Mom, yo, Mom, I gotta go check out this sick show. She'll understand. Then, Monday night, Los Angeles, California, at The Resident, which I've heard is a super, super sweet venue. Very excited to be there. Very excited to play some solo stuff. And, of course, I play a lot of Silverstein covers. I guess they're covers. They're my songs by my band, but they're acoustic, so they're kind of like covers. But I do that. And I do actual covers of other bands as well. Maybe even a Get Up Kids song. So, yes, tickets are available. Go to riveroaksmusic.com for general admission tickets, for VIP. But yeah, the tickets are like $13 or something. It's super cheap. JT from Hawthorne Heights is opening up for me, which is super cool. So yeah, come, be there. Again, the link, riveroaksmusic.com. We're about to get to my conversation with Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids, by the way. But I have to tell you guys about the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Now, this podcast is free. Free content will always be free. I do my weekly episode every Monday. Make sure you're subscribed, blah, blah, blah. But there are some people that need more. There are people that need more content, bonus episodes, maybe some more interaction with me, maybe some more interaction with other fans of the show. Maybe you want some Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. Maybe you want stuff mailed to your house. I don't know. But we have an option for you. And the best part of that is it really does help us keep the lights on, keep the show running week after week. Without this support, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast. We wouldn't be able to bring this free content to you. So if you do enjoy it, please consider being a member of the All Access Club. For as little as $6 a month, you can get in. And I gotta say, everybody in the club is loving it. Shout out to all my sinners on the Facebook group. We're having contests. We're throwing parties. We're cracking jokes. We got meme threads. Whatever you want, it is happening. So the link for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And that's where you can find all the info about it. Check it out. Read it. It is cool. It is fun. And it is just pennies a day. Again, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. All right, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with the one and only Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids. There's room to believe. Out of sight, out of mind, out of reach. Start over, start over. There's no way to begin. Way to begin. Way to begin.
You've had me the whole time.
I have you. Yeah, well, you had me. I didn't have you.
Fair enough.
It's all good. No,
how
I know.
Romantic.
I know you're a veteran to podcasts, so you must have had your fair share of audio problems and connection problems and all that, right?
Yeah, I got a couple of real doozies that I couldn't use because the audio was so bad.
Oh yeah, no, that happened to me one time when a couple guys were doing a call together from a Starbucks on tour. That didn't work out so well. But
yeah, that just sounds like a bad idea.
No, it was a terrible idea. Yeah, no, I had you know, one question I have for you: did you ever forget to hit record? Did that ever happen to you?
Yeah, I have done. That's when I decided when I started using the Skype recorder, I figured out how to set it to automatically start recording immediately whenever I turned it on.
That's so funny. Yeah, no, I happened. It's happened to me just one time. But hey, you know, what can you do?
Well, did you hit record for this?
I did. I make sure now. I'm good. We're a minute and 39 seconds in. It's perfect. So yeah, with the podcasting, it seems like you're taking a bit of a break, hiatus from it. Is your podcast Nothing to Write Home About coming back? Are you sure?
I don't know. I actually just wrote that down when Mike emailed me about talking to you. I was like, man, I wonder if I should start that up again. Because I'm getting ready to like go on the last leg of a tour for an album, and I was like, what do I got going on this summer?
Right.
And I thought maybe that would be one avenue. I got kind of burnt on it.
Yeah.
After a while.
Yeah, I'm like 75 episodes in, and mm-hmm. I feel pretty good still. about it, but I could see it happening. You know, when you have that deadline, like I have every Monday, I have to put on an episode. And there are weeks when it's like, shit, I just have like a crazy week, you know, and I don't like to do podcasts too far in advance. Like, I don't like to have like 10 in the bank.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, you're talking to somebody and it's like, it's not current anymore, you know?
Yeah. It is really nice to have that safety net, though.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when I find I get stressed out, when it's like, oh, shit, it's Friday and I don't have one, and my like fans of the show are expecting me to have an episode on a Monday. So I can totally understand how you could get burned out on it.
Well, I got to a point where I was like, I was doing the booking, I was doing the interviewing, I was doing the editing.
Yeah.
And I really wasn't making any money off of it. Not that was the only reason to do it, but I kind of had to. I mean, I'm spinning so many plates right now that it was kind of like, all right, something's got to give for at least a while.
I get it. No, and you are. I mean, you do have a lot going on. So many projects that seem to sort of come and go, which I like. I like that about you and your career. You know, you seem to put things on ice for a bit and then come back to them. But, you know, with the podcast thing, and this is a podcast, and people I think are interested in podcasts and the whole, like, you know, you talk about money and all that. You got into it pretty early on. I mean, like, what did you start it, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And at that point, podcasts were not what they are today. They're like, in terms of advertising revenue and monetizing it, and even just the listenership. You were kind of in on the ground floor. How did you why did you decide to start a podcast and you know, do that whole thing?
Well, let's see. In 2012, I had decided that I wanted to quit the music industry. I was super, super burnt out on touring and performing and all that kind of stuff, and really just being gone. I was burnt on being gone.
Yeah.
And so I went and I worked on a friend's farm for about 7 or 8 months.
Wow.
And while I was, and it was fantastic. It was, I mean, I almost went bankrupt because, you know, you can't feed a family on a farmhand's wage. But the whole time I would just listen to, I discovered, like, you know, Marin and all these other comedy podcasts. And because I'd been a big NPR head for like a long time, like on tour,
right,
listening to This American Life and Wait and all that kind of stuff. And so it wasn't that weird for me to like switch over to, you know, just people talking. And so, you know, I would spend, you know, 5-6 hours a day, you know, picking radishes and listening to podcasts. And I got to a point where I was kind of like, all Marin's doing is talking to his friends who happen to be comedians. And I was like, I know people who happen to be musicians. I could probably do something like this.
Yeah.
And I've also done enough bad interviews that I know how to like carry on a conversational interview. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Absolutely. That's the biggest thing is that, you know, and that's how I got into it too. Through, I had to do some magazine article where me and Buddy from Census Fail were interviewing each other. And I was like, mm-hmm. and he like said to me after, he's like, oh, those were great questions, man. And I was like, oh, well, shit. You know, maybe there's something there.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something there when you're a musician yourself and you're not just a journalist. Like, the things that are important to you,
yeah,
are different than, not always, but sometimes, like, you know, the sometimes just straight up music journalists can get like deeper than you actually do as an artist. So you're just like, so how did you really think that you were like changing the shape of, you know, the scene and your sound? Is like, no, we just thought the song was good. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, like,
yeah, my favorite is when they reference like that, like for you, it'd be like referencing like the Woodson EP. You know what I mean? Or something like, they'll go super deep and they'll talk about some song and ask you about writing it. Like, where were you? What were you feeling when you, it's like, I don't know. I was like 17 years old and like, you know, it's like, it's just funny how those little details, like, they mean so much to some fans and especially some journalists that are just, let's be honest, fucking nerds. And
right.
And really for you as just a musician, it's like, I don't know. I haven't thought about that in years, and I don't remember.
Well, but for me, it's also just kind of like, I just thought this was kind of bitching, you know, like, it's just like, it's like, I remember when we wrote that, like, I do remember a lot of times when we wrote something and, but I don't remember, like, I didn't like sit down and like write a manifesto about like what I wanted to say.
Right.
It's just like we had good influences that we were ripping off and I missed my girlfriend. So, I mean, that's basically the, that's the magic potion, you know, like,
you're right. Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, all right, well, you know, we, the song sounded cool. We liked it. And I was too young to have the common sense to not write fucking emo sounding bullshit that people now really relate to.
It is you funny know? Though. Well, let's that's a good place to dive in. I mean, obviously, like, first time on the show, and I'm a huge fan of you. One of the things I thought about maybe talking to you about was you as a podcaster. Like, were there ever people that you interviewed there you were like, oh shit, I'm like gonna talk to this fucking guy? Like, for me, in a way, that's who you are for me. Like, Silverstein would not exist if it wasn't for the Get Up Kids. Just would not exist.
Oh, so it's our fault.
You ruined. A lot of people are mad because of you. But no, but seriously, I mean, we grew up as like punk rock kids. I was into punk rock and skate punk and all that shit and some hardcore. And then it was really the Get Up Kids were the first band I was like, huh, I see, like, this makes sense to me. And that was, to me, kind of like a transition into, you know, so many of the other great bands that at the time were your peers and I just sort of got into. So, you know, for me, this is really cool to talk to you about how you got started in this. You know, you already threw the word emo out there, so now I can. The whole emo thing, you know, and I'm sure, like, there was a time when you were like, what the hell? Like, what are people talking about? We're just like a punk band from the Midwest or whatever. Maybe we're a little different, but how did that all happen? How did you get into, obviously, like, punk rock and, you know, the hardcore music scene in Kansas, but then transitioning into like what your band sounded like and kind of taking this term or not taking this term and running with it?
Well, okay. Coming from my, how do I explain this? So, like, the term punk rock is kind of a subjective thing. And like with me and my bandmates, it kind of, we all have very, very different like tastes in music. And there are certain things that we all agree upon. Primarily, like, one of the main ones is Fugazi. And it's sort of like, when we were younger, we didn't really listen to punk rock as far as like what was big at the time. Like, you know, like when I was in high school, it was like Green Day blew up and then like
Rancid and NoFX and stuff like that.
Yeah. And like, that's, I mean, I do like, I feel the same way about like that kind of like Fat Records and Epitaph stuff as I do about like proper hardcore, where it's just like, I like certain things of it a lot, but as a whole, I don't just like blanketly like all, you know, Southern California pop punk bands.
Right.
And that's just me. But at the time, I mean, we were all like, there's not really like a scene in Kansas City. There was like a bar scene, and it was like, it was heavier. It was more like pretty heavily influenced by that band Failure.
Yeah.
You know them?
Of course.
Like, so there's bands like Season of Risk and Molly Maguire and Shiner, who's probably the kind of like the real standout of that as far as like, probably did it the, I don't want to say the best, but they were really good. Right. And so these are all people that we were friends with, but like there wasn't like a scene cause we were younger than all of them and they were playing bars and we were kind of teaming up with like local pop punk bands and local hardcore bands and local indie rock bands to do like VFW hall shows and basement shows. And it was that time when kind of like in the mid 90s when it was sort of like, well, there's not really enough of us that sound similar to like go around. So we might as well just play with this noise rock band, this pop punk band, this ska band and us. And it's just kind of like, well, then we'll just put a show together. And, I mean, we always considered ourselves more of like an indie pop band. And so we were really like influenced by like Superchunk and Archer's a Loaf, but then also like, you know, early Jimmy Eat World and this band from Kansas City, Boys Life, were a really big influence on us. Even in the sense of like they gave us some of our first contacts for our first tour, you know, like they were instrumental creatively and, you know, business wise. But it's this weird thing because it was kind of like we were writing what we thought were sort of like just pop songs, maybe a little bit on the heavier side of like pop music. Cause it, you know, we liked Weezer and like you break that down. It's like those first two Weezer records, the guitars are huge. The drums are huge. It's basically like a heavy metal band playing, you know, 70s pop music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we were pretty influenced by that. And we just kind of wrote what we wrote, and it was sort of like by default, because we sent it out, we put out our first 7-inch ourselves. So you got that, you know, that Discord DIY work ethic of like, well, you know, we'll just do it ourselves because no one else is going to do it for us.
Sure.
And then we sent it to labels, you know, somewhere I still have our rejection letter from Warner Brothers, you know, in 1996. And then the only people who were really interested in it were these like kind of indie pseudo hardcore record labels like Doghouse or Initial. And, you know, I mean,
I forgot about Initial. I like that they had those. They had some great bands. I love they had, you know, back in those days when they had those compilations were a big thing, right? Like the Fat Records ones and the Epitaph ones were especially famous. But I remember Initial had one like that was like extreme hardcore music and like fluorescent letters. It was like super cheesy. Do you remember that? I want to try to find the cover of that. But they did have some great bands.
Those guys were great because they didn't take it seriously. They were like jokers, you know? So it was like, we're extreme hardcore. Skateboards are rad, you know? Like, and so we were drawn to them because we didn't know anything. Like, we didn't know a scene. We didn't know what a hardcore scene was. But then all of a sudden we put a record out on Doghouse and everyone's like, oh, you guys are straight edge and vegan and everything, right? We're like, no, man, we're from Kansas City.
Yeah.
There's literally one straight edge guy in Kansas City. It's Dan from Second Nature. Like, it's just like...
Second Nature Recordings. They put out the first grade records, man. That's what a label. I didn't know it was Kansas City. I guess that was
Kansas City.
I did know that was Kansas City, actually. I haven't thought about that in a long time. Anyways, we're getting deep.
Well, speaking of grade, Kyle did the record cover for the Get Up Kids Coalesce split that came out on Second Nature. Dan put out the first Reggie and the Full Effect record. He put out, you know, Casket Lottery, put out Rocky Vodolato, like a lot of good shit.
Yeah.
Where was I? Oh, but we were sort of just kind of, I don't know. I think that maybe like we've kind of always, at least in the beginning, it was kind of like, we were like in the wrong pond. Kind of.
Yeah.
And I like, and everyone's like, oh, this is like new and fresh. I'm like, eh, not really. You just have been like listening to Judd for too long, you know, like,
yeah.
It's like, we're really just kind of ripping off these bands who you apparently haven't heard.
That's funny.
But and that's just kind of where it comes from. So like, you know, and this gets back to that, like overthinking journalist, like I was like, we didn't know what we were doing.
A lot of people found out about...
We're 18.
Yeah, well, a lot of people found out about the Get Up Kids, like, after this period of time, too, right? And by the time that had emerged, you know, I think I found out about you guys, like, kind of after 4 Minute Mile had come out, before Something to Write Home About came out, like, in that kind of period of time. And I feel like that was common. That was when you guys were blowing up. And, I mean, for everybody else, like, I didn't really know where you guys were from. I, like, thought you guys were in the same kind of scene as, like, bands like Mineral, all the Jade Tree stuff, you know, a lot of those bands. And but you guys really didn't align yourself with those bands at all, at least in terms of your influences and where you came from.
We were friends with them, and we toured with them. Like, we toured with Mineral. We toured with Braid. We played with The Promise Ring a handful of times.
Right, yeah.
But it wasn't like we've always just considered ourselves, you know, like a singular unit, you know, like it was very much like you know, we didn't have like a scene to like help prop us up. And so in the beginning, it was kind of like all of this that we had, we kind of earned on our own. And it was, that's, I guess that's sort of how we've always proceeded. And we understand now that it's like, it's easy to like lump bands from a similar era, especially when they all toured together and they were all friends.
Yeah, sure.
But it's kind of like, you know, we were just the ghetto kids and that's it.
You know, like, well, where did this emo thing come from? Where did this term come from? When did you first kind of hear about it? And what were your like reactions when this is just what you were now?
Well, I always tell people that when, let's say like this is like 94, 95, that emo was always preceded by the word fucking. So it would be like fucking emo kids.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
And it was kind of a very like Maximum Rock and Roll, Screeching Weasel, heavy period of our lives in Kansas City, which, you know, some of the guys in my band have just no tolerance for at all. But, and so like the kind of like punk rock guys are like, what is this emo bullshit? And then, you know, so that's where like, that's what it's kind of like. And then you, when you really break it down, you're just kind of like, okay, so emo is short for emotional. Like what kind of music isn't emotional? Like,
of course, sure.
Is Wagner not emotional because it's not emo? You know, it's like, other than maybe like, I don't know, like some like EDM stuff maybe, you know, like might not be, but it can still elicit emotions.
They're just very emotional about trucks and beer and, you know?
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, totally. But
so I never really got it, and we never really claimed it, but it was just sort of like, at the same time, it's like, what are you going to do? Spend your whole life fighting that, you know, like if that's what you don't have any control over what people call you.
No, but then there was some like, I mean, remember the emo game? I mean, you must remember the emo game.
Of course we were in it.
You were in it. Of course, you know, and like that was a thing. Like what, like, I don't know. I just picture, you know, you're only a couple years older than me, but growing up where you did, not really, like, emo wasn't a thing. Then all of a sudden you start a band, someone puts a label on it, and now you're in a video game, and everyone's calling you this. It just must have been so weird for you.
I mean, I don't think it was that weird. Okay. It was more dumb than weird. Like, it was just sort of like, hey, this is some jackass made a video game where our bass player gets raped by Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. And it's just kind of like, wow, that's pretty out there, man. And so we actually contacted the emo game guy and got the images of our characters in the game, and we made a t-shirt out of it because we were just like, right. Yeah, man, it's funny.
You might as well embrace that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just kind of funny because we made this t-shirt and like nobody bought it because not like it doesn't seem like that many people actually played the emo game, but.
Actually ever played it. That to come to think of it, I don't think I actually played it, but I remember it being like pretty big for, you know, a few months or whatever. I wonder if it's still out there. If you could still play it, I'm gonna
you can find it somewhere.
I'm try to find it.
It's such a funny like cultural, because it's kind of at the same time that like the internet, kind of the MySpace era of the internet, and it's just a very like 8-bit game before that was a thing. You know, where before, like, that was, like, a retro style. But right. It's, you know, it's fine.
I think it's great, man. So, it sounds like you're outside. There's some birds around. You're hanging out. I know you have a family trip this weekend. How are things in your life these days? I know you have a new solo record that you put out a few months ago, and you're going on tour with that. What's kind of, like, day in the life of Matt Pryor these days?
Well, it depends on the day. Today, I got up and got the boys ready to get to school and got them to school and then answered a bunch of emails. And then I went to the gym and then I came home and ate something. And then I'm talking to you.
Pretty good day so far.
This afternoon, I'm probably going to work on some Downright songs and then pick the kids up from school and make dinner and that kind of like boring domesticated shit.
Doesn't sound bad to me, man. I mean, that sounds pretty good to me. Oh yeah, I'm here. You got me?
Hello.
I have you.
I have you now.
Oh, weird. Hello? You got me?
I don't know what that was about.
I don't know. It's yeah. Sketchy. Hey, I'm on that weird Canadian. We have the weird Canadian phones up here. They're just not as good as American phones.
Is that really? Is that a thing?
No, it's not a thing. I've never heard that prejudice.
Before.
I like to tell people, oh, it's this weird Canada. It's like weird. People are like, really? Really? Is that? So the downright thing, I had Mark from Spitalfield on the show a while back. I actually did a solo tour with him over Christmas as well. How are you finding that stuff? For people that don't know, basically, people can contact you and have you write a song for them, like a customized song. That's how it works, right?
Yeah.
So do you do a lot of them? Do you enjoy it?
I do. I get busy at certain times of the year. Like, I'm a little bit busy right now because of Mother's Day coming up.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Because I'd say 90% of what I write are for this service is like love songs, like love ballady kind of I'll catch you sort of things. And so that tends to be Valentine's Day, Christmas, and then like, you know, peppered yeah. throughout the year with like anniversaries and weddings and stuff like that. It's not artistically fulfilling by any means, but it is nice to be able to find another like revenue stream that I can still be creative but not have to be gone away right. from the family. And so in that regard, it's great. But if that was the only thing that I did, I don't think it would be like, I kind of liken it to like, it's almost kind of like being in advertising or,
yeah,
you know, like it's just sort of like I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for someone else who's paying me, which, you know, I guess that's kind of what touring is, too.
Yeah.
If you really think about it.
In some respect, it is. Yeah. Although, you know, some people, I mean, I know you're not a huge touring guy. I mean, I know that that's part of why the Get Up Kids went away initially. You know, I know that you don't like being away from your family for long periods of time. So I get that. But before we get into that stuff, with this, as a songwriter, what's your approach with this stuff? Like, do you just kind of sit down with a guitar and play like a G and then figure out a little melody and then kind of just...
For the downright stuff?
For the downright stuff, yeah. Like
for the downright stuff, what I do is I sit down with what they've given me and I kind of write it out like a poem, just kind of like, cause it's, I'll ask a lot of questions of like, you know, like, so we're saying it's up for a relationship or something like that. It's like, so tell me about the time you met, when you proposed, the fun trip you went on together. The best is, I think, is when it's like, what's the one thing that you two say to each other that no one else says, or you call each other or,
right.
you know, that kind of thing. Cause then that's basically a chorus. You know,
right.
right there. So just kind of, and then, you know, I just kind of like write it out in sort of like kind of standard stanzas. And then, depending on what kind of song they want, I'll kind of like come up with a couple different chords for it and then just kind of hash out the melody. And then I have to edit the lines a little bit sometimes based on, you know, what chords I come up with and like, for syllables and all that yeah, kind of sure. stuff. But it's, I mean, the songs themselves are not really like musically, not like reinventing the wheel, but, the lyrics are all highly specific and highly right. personal. And I think that's more what people are paying for, you know, like,
I think so too. Go ahead. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, if I accidentally repeat a melody in two different songs, I don't think it's the end of the world.
No. I mean, as long as you're not repeating a melody and a chord progression, you know, and
yeah.
everything. But I'm sure, like, I mean, I know, like the first guy or one of the first guys to do it was, like, Max from Say Anything with the song shop that he opened up. And
right.
Apparently he's done, like, thousands of them.
That's what he says.
Which is crazy. That is what he says. I mean, I don't know. But if it's true, how many have you done?
Coming up on like 800.
800?
Yeah.
Damn, that is a lot.
I mean, that's over like 4 years, I think.
That's still so many though, man. Like 200 a year. That's how long does it take you to bang one out typically? I mean, I'm sure it's not always the same, but
half hour, maybe. Like, you know, it's. I mean, I don't want to diminish it at all, but it's not.
You're being honest. That's quick. I just couldn't do it. I don't think. I think because I've never written songs that way. I think every time I write a song, it's like, okay, I'm going to put this on a record. And that, you know, and this is going to be my name behind it, and everyone's going to hear this. Anyone that finds it, I think that I've never written in that way. I think it would be hard to separate.
Well, it's a different mindset. It's not really a matter of separating it, because I still have that mindset when I'm writing, you know, my own stuff. But in this regard, I'm writing for the two people that are going to hear it. You know what I mean? And so, like, as long as they're happy, then I've done my job correctly. You know, and I'm not going for like mass appeal on it. It's just sort of like, you know, you're stoked, then I did good. And it's just, like I said, it's not like the most creative outlet in the world, but it's also kind of like working a different part of your brain, a different muscle in your brain, you know, like where it's just like, okay, like I can sit down and bang out lyrics pretty quickly now, even like we did some new Get Up Kids songs, and it was just like I didn't have lyrics the morning that I was supposed to do vocals, and I was like, all right, just give me an hour, and I'm really happy with what I came up with, you know, it's just like, and it's kind of become, I don't know, it's made me a better writer, and certainly a more prolific one.
Oh, definitely prolific. That's the right word. Are you a bit of a last minute guy when you write lyrics and stuff? Like,
I have been lately.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like, I have to have a reason to write. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't have enough time when I'm home to like just sit around and dick around on guitar on my porch and like wait for inspiration to hit me. It just sort of like, it's like, okay, now it's the time to write. So sit down and write something. So that's what I do.
So that must just be so much different than when you were younger writing songs. I mean, like
it's different in the sense that like, it doesn't take me as long to write lyrics. I can still very much like get together with a group of other musicians and we can come up with like a riff and an arrangement, and I can hear the vocal melody. Like I'll just be like, okay, let's do this, you know, let's do this pre-chorus two times instead of one, because I've got an idea for a melody in my head that would work better as two. Right. And then I can just kind of then take that. Like with Get It Kids, we can write like a complete song with no vocals in it, and I can take it home and hash out a melody and lyrics to it. Like it's just not a skill I've developed. Yeah, I guess.
Well, sure, of course. You ever do any co-writing with like other people, artists, anything like that?
Not a lot outside of like band work. Yeah. Like
I'm a little surprised about that actually. Like it sounds like you'd be really good in that role, and you know, I don't know. It seems like something you could do that's outside of, you know, the whole putting out a record, touring for 2 years like you've done, you know, for a lot of your career.
The way I've kind of observed that sort of like co-writing world is it's like a hard nut to crack, and then once you actually crack it, then you get a lot of work. You know, like but like I've never really pursued it that much. I found that like I think I work better when I'm working with people who don't have the same skill set that I do. So like if I surround myself with a really good bass player and a really good drummer, and like I have a song idea, then they can make that song better. But then I don't know. I've never really tried to sit down other than like with Jim, like I don't think I've really ever like, I don't know. So part of me is just kind of like, just let me do the one thing I'm good at is lyrics and melody. So just let me do that. You figure out the drum part, and you figure out the bass part, and we'll go from there.
Well, that's, yeah, that's cool. No, I mean, everyone's different, you know, that's why I have this show. So your voice, obviously, it's the Lead Singer Sinner podcast. We are singers. We talk about how hard our lives are, going on tour and having to sing every night. Your voice really, I felt like as a fan of your band and seeing you guys grow over the years, I felt like the best I ever saw you sing live was when you guys did the reunion stuff. Whenever that was, I think it was like the Bamboozle Left or show or whatever, when you guys had been gone for a while and came back. And I saw you, and I was like, that was the best I've ever seen you guys play and the best I've ever seen Matt sing. How did your voice develop over the years? Did you have trouble with it, you know, when you were obviously like young and still kind of finding your voice? How was that for you?
Let's see. I started singing in this like pop punk band called Secret Decoder Ring. I was just a guitar player up till that point, and I didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah.
But we played so many shows that I just, you know, it was one of those like nobody else wanted to sing kind of things. And then
I would say of the people that come on the show, it's like 75% say that. Started out as a guitar player, had no interest in singing. I was the only guy that could carry a tune. That's such a classic story. So it's,
well, but even at the time, I don't know that I was opposed to being a singer. I just didn't think I was very good at it. You know what I mean?
Like, okay, yeah. So you were interested, but then you just, yeah, you weren't super.
But
confident.
Then nobody really was. And so then you can kind of hear that by the time Get Up Kids come around. That, like, I mean, the vocals on 4 Minute Mile are horrible. They're completely flat the whole record, and it's this thing where it, like, I don't know. There's something about that kind of ineptitude on my part that seems to be sort of endearing to people.
And, yeah.
But like when I sing those songs now, like they're in key and they sound better, and no one's like, no one ever says you don't sing Amy as shitty as you did on the record. But, you know, and then it's just a matter of like putting in your 10,000 hours. I actually think I'm a better singer now than I have been in a long time. The thing with Get Up Kids though is that it's so taxing because it's a lot of like Something Right Home About is almost entirely at the top of my range.
Yeah.
At like almost every, like all the ones that people really want to hear, it's all like yeah. at the top of my range. And it's just kind of like, you know, doing that for 4 weeks straight, I'm pretty, you know, shredded by the end of it. Like I can't go yeah. out to the merch table after a Get Up Kids show. Like I can't sing like that for an hour and a half and then go talk to people over like the PA playing, or go out with everybody after the show. I have to go back to the bus and just, you know.
Really? That's really how it is? Even over all these years of doing it, you never really got the stamina like you could? Or I mean,
it's just not worth it. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like, you know, if we play a show and then I go out with the guys after the show, then I'll be completely hoarse the next day. So, you know, it is what it is.
That's crazy. Yeah. No, I mean, did that bum you out though? Like you know, you play these shows and it's like, great and awesome, and then like everyone else is kind of going out and celebrating and hanging out, and you're just like, well, I'm just gonna like sit in the bus. Is that like kind of hard for you? Like, I mean, you're a social guy.
Yeah, but I'm not really a big bar guy. Like I'm fine to like sit on the bus and drink some beers and watch TV, you know what I mean? Like that doesn't bother me. It's more just like I definitely get jealous. Like it's hard for me to like sing. Like I can't sing if my voice like I can still play guitar, but how do I explain this? It terrifies me not being able to hit the notes. Like it's like the only part of performing that I'm actually scared of, is when your voice is kind of shot and like you try to hit the high note and you just can't.
Can't get there.
And and it just, it's embarrassing, and it's just, and then like, you know, the people who paid money, they want to hear, you know, the song they want to hear. And it's just like, so then it's like my fault you know, if I can't do it. And like the rest of the guys in the band don't have that problem.
No.
You know what I mean? Like they could be hungover as fuck and it's just like, oh yeah, I can still play bass. You
know, like, yeah, I always say, I forget who I had was talking to the other day. I was like, if I was a bass player in a band, I'd be a total alcoholic piece of shit. Yeah. And I know I probably wouldn't be, but in my mind, I'd be like, I can do anything, like, you know, because there's, you know, you don't have to worry about the next day.
Well, there's that. That's the bass player joke. It's like,
yep.
A bass player walks past a bar. No, it could happen.
I haven't heard that one. That's pretty funny.
I've actually, so I started this this pop punk band with, it's me and Josh from The Anniversary and Jim from Get Up Kids and this guy Adam who plays drums in a Kansas City band called The Architects. And I'm playing bass. And they're like we're all singing and I'm playing bass and singing. And they're like, I was like, I can play guitar. We can get a bass player. And like, no, we don't want to pay anybody else to play bass. I'm like, all right, so I'll play bass. And they're like, so what kind of like bass rig are you going to get? And I'm like, who gives a shit? I play bass. Like,
yeah,
I'm in charge of bringing beer to practice.
That's funny. That is funny. So, no, I mean, yeah, it is. I played bass for a very short time in like a band where I had no responsibilities and it was really fun. Definitely. Is it true that you guys used to pick your songs, like basically pull your set list, just name like song names out of a hat?
We have done that. It's not something we do now.
I think this is like back in the, yeah, I'm talking over 10 years ago. Somebody told me that you used to do that. And I wondered if that was true. And I wondered also if, I mean, as a singer and somebody that's worried about their voice, that sounds like kind of a horrible idea.
Well, I mean, I don't think that wasn't like a common practice.
Oh, okay.
But like,
I like somebody told me you did it for like years or something, but I guess that's not true.
No, but I mean, when you're 20 years old and you're playing in a basement and you can't hear yourself sing over the vocal PA anyway, and you're only playing for 30 minutes, then you're kind of invincible and you can do anything, you know?
Totally.
At that point, it was actually harder to sing the quiet ones because you couldn't hear yourself sing.
Absolutely. No, I know. And there's like a confidence thing too there too. I think when you're just like singing all the way, it doesn't matter as much when you're singing all like, there's nothing worse than singing like a quiet part where you miss the note like completely. And it like seems like very noticeable too. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I've kind of learned how to deal with that, like, because I've performed like solo so many times now. And it's actually something that I've been instilling. Like, my daughter's been on tour with me, and she's been performing. She's a singer songwriter herself.
How old
like
is she
one
now?
Of she's 15.
Cool.
And one of the first things that I taught her was like, I'm like, if you fuck up, just keep going. If you fuck up like really bad, then laugh at yourself and make a joke about it. But like, if you just kind of fuck up a little bit, like even if people do notice, they'll forget.
Yeah.
You know?
No, so, it's true. Somebody told me one time, I forget who it was, an older band that took us out on tour and said, like if your voice is off a little bit, never apologize to the crowd. Never bring it up. Cause if you bring it up, people will talk, like people will notice it more. People will be like, oh, he was off. And then they'll be listening for you to like make mistakes. And most people don't notice it because, you know, as singers, we're our own worst critics.
Yeah, I think there's a balance. I think that like a certain amount of self-deprecation is endearing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think if you take yourself too seriously and you suck, then that's almost worse than being like, hey guys, I've got a cold.
Right.
Why don't you guys help me out? Like,
right. Sure.
You know,
sure.
in those instances, I don't like, okay. So if I'm going to play like a solo show, I play maybe three or four Get Up Kids songs in my set. And I kind of mostly just kind of like play what I want. And then I, you know, do a handful that are kind of like gimmies. And then, but if like my voice is going, I'll just be like, all right, I'll play whatever you want as long as you guys help me sing it. And then that's a whole different, like, fun experience for people, you know. And it's just kind of like, you know, you're just kind of admitting that you're human, you know, which is...
For sure.
But, like, you know, if we're doing, like, a big show, in like a theater, it's kind of like I'd probably take more pains to like try and arrange the set list in a way where I had more breaks and maybe we were playing more of the like mid-tempo stuff that I didn't have to scream, or we were like saving a lot of that stuff for the end where maybe I'm like more warmed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, totally. No, I totally get it. But back to your daughter. So she's 15. She's aspiring musician. Have you, like, has she just taken interest in like you as a musician, young, like earlier in her life? How did that all?
No, she. I mean, we had them start taking piano lessons when they were in like first grade, and then that kind of morphed into taking guitar lessons. And then she got really into like Nico Case and Tegan and Sarah, and a lot of like female singer songwriters. And she just started playing guitar and singing. And then one day, like going from seventh grade to eighth grade, it was like, holy shit, her voice is amazing. Like, when did this?
Right.
Like, when did this happen? And like everyone kind of like took notice of it. And it's just sort of like, now she plays shows with me. And afterwards, people are like, your daughter's voice is amazing. You're okay too.
That's great.
So she's got some definite like raw talent, but she's been on tour with me this whole year so far. And she's definitely putting in her hours. She's getting better and better.
That's cool. So do you bring, is it just like, do you bring your wife or do you bring your like other kids too? Or how does it work? Just you guys?
Well, that's the goal. The goal is to try and convince my wife to sell our house and buy an RV and we'll just go on tour for a year. And then, but so this was kind of like the first test of it. Cause then okay. It's a whole nother thing of like, so my daughter Lily, she has to be in, and she wants to be in, there's a like a virtual school. Here, yeah. So she's a freshman in high school, and so she's I believe that would be grade 9 for
That's
you.
Right, grade 9, you got it.
And
you know your Canadian stuff. Yeah.
I know my way. I've been around the world. So Kansas has a really good like online school program. It's not homeschooling. Like I'm not her teacher. Yeah. It's more like taking like online courses in college. And so she does like what she does. Like we're gone. We're leaving next Wednesday, a week from today, for 10 days. So what she's doing while we're home is she's kind of like getting 2 weeks worth of work done so that when we're out on the road, she doesn't have to fuck with it. And then she's actually getting an independent study and music credit for being on tour. So,
that's very
cool. Kind of cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. You guys tour like, do you guys tour in a van? Like, how do you guys do that logistically? It must be different for you, you know, all those years touring like with other guys and, you know, just the way it is, like either on a bus or in a van with a bunch of dudes. And this is like, now you're with your daughter. It must be just such a different vibe.
So this, since my record came out in February, I've been doing basically four short co-headlining runs with Dan Andriano from the Alkaline Trio.
Yep.
And he and I have toured together on acoustic tours, and it's very much just like guys in the van, and you know, it can get a little raunchy, but like
sure.
It's all dads, you know. Yeah. And so
sometimes dads are the worst though, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, and sometimes you just, you know, you want to let loose. But like I mean, honestly, like I was saying before, like I don't really go out after the show anyway. So it's just kind of like, all right, so show's over. Let's go to the hotel, you know, let's watch, you know, late night and then go to bed. You know, yeah. it's pretty normal. I really would like, cause I really enjoy camping a lot. I would really like to do it in an RV just because I like to cook. And yeah. One of the things that I miss when I'm, you know, in a van is there's nowhere for me to cook. I have to eat out all the time. So
yeah, that's true. Does your daughter, is there ever like a concern that she's like missing out on kind of like that normal, like, you know, high school life that, like that you had or that, you know, people have and that she's hanging out with, you know, 30-year-old you know, dudes in their 30s and not like people her own age? Is that like at all a concern or a conversation?
Well, I mean, there's two parts to that.
Yeah.
One is that I fucking hated high school. And I always say the only way I would go to my high school reunion is if I was going to blow it up. And
that's intense.
Man. I hated high school. I went to Catholic school for 12 years and I was fucking, I got called a faggot every day and it was just awful. And so she was having, you know, some struggles with other kids and bullies and stuff. And
yeah,
you get in this kind of concept of unschooling is what they call it, where it's just sort of like, why do we make our kids, like, it's this thing where like, oh, you'll, you know, you got to put up with these people and, you know, it's part of growing up. And it's like, it's kind of not, because like, if you were working in an office place where someone was tormenting you all the time, you'd either quit or try to have them fired or, you know, something, like, you would do something. You wouldn't just fucking take it.
No.
Like, because it makes you, you know, like,
no.
But that's what we tell kids. That's what my parents told me, you know, it's just like, and it kind of took us like taking her out of that environment for me to realize that like, oh yeah, some of this is just bullshit. Like, you know, being on tour and seeing the world is a much more enriching experience than, you know, study hall. You know what I mean? Like, and so she's a very social person. She's, when she's home, she's with her friends all the time. And so if she were just a complete like introvert loner, then I would be more concerned about it. But I mean,
I'm totally on board for that. And I think like we should all be progressive in the way we think about education and the way we think about that stuff. I don't think that old school is the right school. I absolutely don't. I'm just wondering, you know, because I think every kid, it's like natural to you know, to like long for other things or wonder about other things. And like some people want that normal thing because that's like what her friends are probably going through. You know what I mean? But I'm sure they would love to be on tour with their dad, like playing rock and roll too. So,
well, I mean, we talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, so what do you want to do this fall? Like, do you want to go back to brick and mortar school? Like, cause we're not touring this fall. I'm like, what do you, you know, summer's, you know, a whole different kettle of fish as a parent. We're just like, all right, you can't fucking watch TV or YouTube all day. You have to go outside.
Yeah, I know. It's different.
But the, you know, it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to go back to, do you want to stay in virtual school? Do you want to like take orchestra and choir, which is what she did her first semester. So she was going to brick and mortar for like 2 hours a day. And it's just like, and she's like, no, I like doing this. I like playing music. And she gets good grades and she still has a social life. I mean,
does she have recorded stuff?
She's recorded a couple songs and then the goal is to get her to record an album this year.
Cool. Are you going to be like pretty hands on with that or are you going to kind of let her do her own thing? What's the plan there?
A little of both.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a teenager, so she's not the most motivated person in the world. And she doesn't know anything about recording record engineering, which I do. So, it's kind of, I mean, the big thing for me is I want to be supportive, but I don't want to be like a momager. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be like stage dad who's like, all right, smile for the camera, smile for the camera.
Right. No, I know. That's very cringy when I'm thinking about that. Yeah, it's definitely tough though because you don't want to like be like, okay, do whatever, and then have her make like mistakes that you made that everyone makes that you don't have to make.
Yeah,
you know. So I totally get that.
Some people would be like, you should have her like audition for The Voice, and I'm like, that's not what we do. We don't go on The Voice. We go on tour and we put out records.
Right. That's what the Pryor family does.
Well, that's just, I mean, that's my,
I know, man.
That's my inner Ian MacKay going like, no.
Is it Ian MacKay or Ian McKay? I always thought it was Ian MacKay.
Well, okay. For the first half of my life, it was Ian MacKay. And then I've been corrected enough times that I started saying MacKay.
I got to get him on the show and ask him, I guess. I don't know. I hear it so many different ways. I've even heard like people that know the guy say it MacKay. So I don't know. I don't even
know. I don't know.
But I always said MacKay. So Anyways, hey, whatever. You know, we got to.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do? So before I let you go, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but new record came out in February. I read that you said it's a depressing record.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the record.
Well, okay. So in 2015, I lost several people in my life that I was close to all within about 6 months of each other. And so it really got me kind of thinking. And then, you know, I turned 40 this year and just kind of like thinking about that. And just so I wanted to write both songs to remember those people that were important to me, but then also to write songs that were trying to be like enjoying the life that we have and celebrating it and like not being afraid to try things and take risks and that kind of, because life is short, as they say.
Yeah.
And so it's a very stripped down, like acoustic record, and a lot of it's about death. So it can be a bit of a bummer, you know, but
bummer tunes. Yeah.
It's a great record to listen to on a rainy day if you're sitting on your porch reading a book.
Doesn't sound like that's where you are. I hear like birds. I picture sunshine where you are.
No, it's actually pouring down rain. It's not pouring down. It just stopped raining.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's not a dreary day, but it's a spring day. And Kansas can be like freezing cold on Monday and then like shorts and a t-shirt on Tuesday.
No,
and that's why everyone gets sick this time of year, because the weather changes so sporadically.
Yeah, well, I'm from Canada. It's the same thing. That's crazy. That's cool. So with this record, I mean, it's still new. It came out in February. You're doing a bunch of touring, obviously, for that. What are your plans? You know, I know you say you're off this fall. Are you doing more stuff with the Get Up Kids again? Are there any plans for that? What about some of the New Amsterdam stuff? Because that's one of my favorite projects you did.
The New Amsterdams, I've just kind of retired the name because
okay,
it was
so
sort
you've
of like
transitioned it over. Do you still play those songs live?
Yes.
Cool.
And so it just got to be kind of it was really just more of a business decision of just like not having so many things, and then also to have like, as much as I hate being a solo artist, I'm not performing solo, but just like putting my name on a t-shirt is still really weird to me.
Yeah.
But it makes sense to have it all under my name, whether it's the podcast or, you know, an album or a show or whatever. Because it was kind of scatterbrained there for a while. But then everything that I had ended with Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids. So it'd be like the New Amsterdams, and then on the flyer it said featuring Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids. And so might as well just have it be Matt Pryor of the Get Up Kids.
Right.
Call it a day.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of having the same problem with my solo stuff, because my solo stuff, I didn't want to put my name on a t-shirt either. So I called it River Oaks, which is, you know, the community I grew up in. But I think there are people that are confused that don't really understand what's going on.
Yeah. There is an element of that. It's hard to sell something new. It's easier to sell something that people already know,
I guess,
the name of.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that sounds cold and calculated, but it's just true. So it's like, the most of the New Amsterdam's records are basically solo records anyway. So if I had just called it Matt Pryor from the beginning, that probably would have been, but I didn't feel comfortable. So I played those songs. I mean, if I ever wanted to do a tour that was like, you know, I always love the very last New Amsterdam's full length. Was called At the Foot of My Rival. And it's one of my favorite records that I've ever made. And it's really heavily orchestrated. And I've always wanted to like be able to tour that, but it's just, it's a financial impossibility.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Get Up Kids are writing a new album very, very slowly. Because everyone is so busy with so many other things. It's kind of like you have to wait for the planets to align just to get us together to write.
Right.
And then you'll have to wait for the planets to, you have to wait for the universes to align in order to get us to like put a record out and tour. But like we've written and recorded four songs that we're pretty stoked on.
cool.
Kind of figured out this sort of like the way I've been pitching it is like, what does the, like, it's the band who made Something to Write Home About, but now, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like reinventing, but it's current. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And that was kind of how I was trying to ask you that question without, cause it's hard when you say, oh, well, what does it sound like? It's like, oh, I don't fucking know. But the Get Up Kids, they like, you, your band did have so many different periods of time, you know, like all of your records are very different.
Right.
You know? So it's very hard.
Which is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, I guess I'd ask you just which album is it most similar to? Is, you know, and I guess if Something to Write Home About is the answer, that's an answer a lot of people are going to really like.
I mean, I would say it's somewhere like, I don't know if it's most similar to that, but it's definitely like there are elements of Something to Write Home About that we like consciously discarded, like. I mean, these are like for like octave chords and like doing like halftime breakdowns and stuff like that, that we now kind of realize have a place in what we do. They don't have to be the only thing that we do, but,
So you mean octave chords, you've abandoned them and you're bringing them back, or you're just like not doing them anymore?
I wouldn't say that we had abandoned them. I wouldn't say that we're bringing them back. We're just not, there's not an outright ban on them
right
anymore.
That's funny. Yeah, that's because yeah, like octave chords can be fucking cool. Like they can really make a part sing, and it's true. Like now, whenever it's like, all right, what lead are we gonna do over this part? If somebody dares to play an octave chord, it's like, come on, man, that's like, it's like it's too easy, you know?
Well, and it does. That's part of the conversation too. Is just like, okay, yeah, the octave chord sounds good. How can we revoice that? And it's like, all right, so we'll revoice it. And then, like, if that's not as cool as the octave chord, then we'll go back to the octave chord. But, like, you don't want it to just be like, well, here's the octave chord part. You know, like,
yeah,
you want to, like, try different things. Or, like, one of the new songs that we have, it had this, like, halftime part in the pre-chorus. And then the second time it happens in the song, it doesn't go into, like, the kind of hardcore halftime beat. It goes into, like, a straight, like James Brown funk beat that like, but you don't notice it because it's just sort of like, it's kind of like buried in there. Like it's subliminal, you know, like, so so a lot of the things that like we really like as songwriters and artists is like, you know, where can we make this kind of funky or make this kind of groovy within this like riffy rock song? You know what I mean? So that people don't, you don't even realize that it's there until you try to learn how to play it. And then,
yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, we're making a rock record. I'm not going to say it sounds like Something You're at Home About, but there's elements of it that like,
well, you still got another 6 or 7 songs to write at least, right? Too. So
yeah, it'll be at least 3 or 4 years before it comes out.
That long. Do you guys all still live in Kansas?
No.
That's a problem then.
Me and Ryan live here. Jim lives in Kansas City. James lives on Long Island. And then Rob lives in Massachusetts. But the problem is Rob plays bass in that band Spoon.
Oh, and yeah, so, really? I didn't know that.
So we're kind of beholden to Spoon's schedule currently.
yeah, well.
And they're busy right now.
Yeah, well,
they just put a new record out.
That's good for him if that's what he wants to do. Oh, absolutely, that's great.
No, absolutely. It's you know, they're a good band.
Yeah, no, awesome, man. Cool. Well, that's great. I mean, 3 to 4 years is a little bit of a wait.
It'll probably come out next year.
Oh, really? Okay, great. Okay, good, good.
That's the goal.
That's good. So probably 2 years. You say a year, it'll be 2. Yeah. What are you gonna do? Well, you're a busy guy. It's really great to talk to you, man. Thanks for everything. Good luck with the upcoming tour, with your daughter's career, everything. It's awesome, man.
Thanks, man.
And I hope you get back into the podcasting too. I really enjoy your show.
You know, I think I might.
Well, if you want to have me on as a guest, I'd love to do it.
Look at that! You just invited yourself.
Yeah, I'm available, Matt. Call me. You got my number.
Fair enough. I will do it.
All right, man. You have a great
day.
I'll
talk to you later.
Yeah, man.
You too, man. Bye.
Thanks. See ya. So there it is with Matt. Pretty cool stuff. I love how he's going out with his daughter on tour. And the Song Shop thing, on Downright, you know, which my buddy Mark owns. That's crazy. 800 songs. Definitely, though, hey, Mother's Day is coming up. I guess it's too late now. But how sick would it be to have Matt Pryor write a song for you? Check it out. Matt and I talked a little bit about his podcast, Nothing to Write Home About, which is awesome. Definitely go back, check out some of the past episodes. I know it's not currently happening. Hopefully he brings it back. But that does remind me, I am talking about some of the other great podcasts on the Jabberjaw Media Network. And this particular show is actually, it's a newer show, but my boy Dewey does a great job. It's called the Pure Pleasure Podcast. And host Dewey Help Us lets you take on the role of the fly on the wall, listening in on real talk with your favorite artists and creatives while they discuss life, love, loss, and present the stories that shape them into who they are today. Hear them in their own words through candid and genuine conversation on Pure Pleasure. Upcoming guests include Anthony Green from Circus Survive, that's a guy, Adam D. of Killswitch Engage, that's also a guy, and Jeff Rickley of Thursday, another guy. Visit purepleasurepodcast.com, that's a bit of a tongue twister, to check out the Pure Pleasure Podcast, really is a tongue twister, today. And don't forget to rate and subscribe on iTunes to get all the latest and upcoming shows every Saturday. So there you have it, more stuff to check out if you've listened to all my episodes. And I hope you have. Anyways, as always, I will leave you with a song. Here's one of my favorite Get Up Kids tracks from Something to Write Home About. Here is I'm a Loner, Dottie, a Rebel on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week. Still here. You know what? It's bonus song time. A lot of people don't know, but Silverstein at one point did cover the Get Up Kids. And since it's flown under the radar so much, I figure, what the hell? Maybe you're interested. So here's the first Get Up Kids song I ever heard. I remember a girl put this on a mixtape for me. So here's our cover of it. And the song is called Coming Clean. All right, bye for real. And we'll see you next week.